And welcome to another episode of the RevVR podcast. I am your host, Reverend Kyle. I have had a few people on the podcast over the course of the many years I've been doing this, and it's very rare for me to have somebody be on twice, or even three times for that matter. Well, we're gonna do that today. In this episode, I have brought along someone who has kind of been there from the beginning. So if you're a regular listener, you know that this person has been on the podcast two previous times and has always had an interesting perspective on the industry and the trends and everything that's going on. So I thought it would be fun to bring him back and kind of do a state of the VR union podcast, because I think it's pretty fitting since that seems to be the hot button right now. Is what is the state of things? Where are we now? Where are we going? And so I'd like to welcome Mr. Kevin Williams to the show. Kevin, how are you doing today?
I'm doing fantastically. Thank you for asking us back.
Good, good. So, Kevin, I always botch trying to say exactly what your industry is called. So I'm going to let you kind of give a brief synopsis of your role in this industry.
Well, I'm when I fill out the tax form, or when I'm accused at customs entering the US or the UK, I always say that I work in the out-of-home entertainment sector. I've worked in arcade industry, the theme park industry, the content game development side. But fundamentally, what we do, or what KWP does, what the stuff that I do and I write, is all about out of home entertainment, pay for play, location based entertainment.
So out of home entertainment means that I am in somebody else's business place, and it's either an arcade or a Dave and Buster's or a Chuck E. Cheese or an amusement park, and
or a Bellagio or an MGM Grand or a Cineplex or an Odeon.
Right. So there's all sorts of different things, and these are the out of home versions of our Game Boys and our Wiis and our VR headsets and our pinball machines, if we're cool enough to have one of those in our home.
This is a little bit more. We also include, the fundamentals of what we do in out-of-home entertainment is immersive entertainment. I don't fixate on the fruit machines or on the pinball tables. I deal with digital entertainment systems. So that includes everything from a Star Tours multi-seat theme park attraction all the way down to a Omni Arena virtual reality arcade system.
Okay, so that's pretty cool, because there has been a lot of talk in recently in the news about people want to try VR, they want to try this immersive technology, but they don't necessarily want to make the investment. And this is where your industry really kind of takes a foothold in terms of getting people into this technology.
Well, we remember, if you can jump back into the myths of time, there should be that kind of wibbly effect on the screen. When we first had our conversations prior to the launch of the Oculus, prior to, the acquisitions and all of the things going on, I made it very clear, having worked in VR since the 90s, that, I always felt that VR was going to have a part to play in immersive entertainment, out-of-home entertainment, as it's always had. And that the claims that the machine was going to bounce out the door at $399 and, the world was going to be fantastic and all these PCs would be really cheap was never going to happen in the short term. It would happen in the medium term. But during that 5 or 10 years, we in the outer home entertainment sector with deep pockets would be able to maximize off of the interest in immersive entertainment.
if you want to go back, folks, if you're listening and you don't remember the conversations that Kevin and I have had in previous
years.
Yeah. Well, but if they want to catch up and they want to kind of see the evolution of our conversations, they can go back. It's episode 60, I believe, was the first one that you were on, and then episode 84. So I believe that we talked twice within the span of a year, which is pretty unusual for guests on my podcast. But I always have a tendency to find your perspective on things insightful and entertaining, because really, you know, everybody I talk to in the VR space either is an indie developer or, you know, a AAA developer, or, you know, they're working on their own thing. And there's not a lot of people that I talk to who's worrying too much about what happens out there. And so it's good to have that perspective on occasion.
You know, we also appreciate your views, please, Carl.
Thank you.
Over the years, it's been great.
Yeah, my views have become, there's been a lot of space in between my reviews lately, you know. Having a real job in the VR space and AR space, I guess I should say. There's been an evolution. There's been kind of a gradual climb of demand for developers in the space, and agencies are taking off. And you do see a lot of transitions where people that you used to hear about a lot, you're not hearing about as much because they're kind of under the radar or behind the scenes or in stealth mode. Now, I'm not in stealth mode. I'm just having, less content because of other things taking place. Do you see in your field, Kevin, do you see an upswing in the amount of demand for content and hardware and things like that?
Well, outer home entertainment requires unique kinds of hardware and unique kinds of software. That's the normal stuff. There is now this new industry that has emerged out of China called the VR arcade sector, which hopes to take the consumer type products and then offer them in a commercial outing so people don't have to drop their hand into their pocket. And so that's a new wrinkle for me. I always thought that we were going to be using VR technology, continuation of what we were doing at Disney Quest and other projects, but I didn't really see the arcade 2.0 explosion being as big as it's actually become. And that's, you know, you've got to look at some interesting situations beyond our friends at IMAX VR and their efforts in VR arcades. We have a considerable number of companies that are pivoting, that lovely word that seems to cover all of this. They are pivoting from depending on consumer investment in their technology and their products and looking at commercial. So we have Star VR, Pimax, and then we have our friends with Raw Data, who have now announced that they are going to be investing a lot of their time and energies into more VR arcade-centric projects.
Yeah, I find that interesting because really I love the Servios guys and girls, and they're, as a company, they're just wonderful, and they're such an amazing success story. And to hear that they are expanding into the arcade sector, I think really validates that industry, from knowing everybody is kind of itching to try some of this stuff, and to know that Servios is going to be the company that's going to put some of this in there. I'm intrigued. I'm really excited to see what happens with that.
Well, I can list about 20, 21 companies that you would know from the consumer sector that have pivoted towards out-of-home entertainment sector. Verzoom, Servios, Striker VR, Vertrix, the list goes on. And really what happens in a lot of the consumer media that most of your audience consumes, as soon as a company moves into the enterprise and out-of-home entertainment sector, the commercial entertainment sector, then coverage of them is stopped. And there's a particular political reason why most of the consumer VR industry's media does not cover the out-of-home entertainment sector. It's because we don't pay their wages.
Ah, okay. So when we go to sites like Road to VR, Upload VR, VR Focus.
Boy, I write.
Do we not want to call anybody out? I look at these things and I think to myself, okay, you know, how often do we really hear about the arcade stuff? We do see general on occasion articles that say, okay, here's an arcade, especially a lot of the coverage in Asia. There does seem to be a lot of emphasis on, look at what is happening, you know, in Japan and China and, you know, maybe other areas over there. What's your take on that? Why do they report on that, but you don't hear a whole lot of reports of the US stuff?
So I have to, you know, there's a big caveat here that, you know, I have to announce myself that I've written for Road to VR, and I currently write a column in VR Focus, and I own and publish a newsletter, The Stinger Report. So, you know, I have a vested interest here, and I'm going to make sure that everything I do is fantastic and everybody else is awful. But the fundamentals are, there's spoon feeding is a big part of a lot of this. It's easier to get news coverage of Japanese and Chinese VR entertainment projects because there's quite a few news resources that you can go to that update those on a regular basis. It's a lot harder to report about how successful Springboard is or Private Label is with them. You know, these guys have about over 200 to 300 VR arcades in America. Or we have the 10 or 20 facilities by Control V, or we have all of the European sites, our friends at Hologate and so forth. So the stuff's out there. They don't want to, you know, they don't want to have to do the shoe lever. There's also the, as I said earlier, the, you're not getting paid to cover out of home entertainment, but you are getting paid to cover consumer entertainment through advertising, sponsorship and so forth. And then there's the other major point, which is it's a very difficult and complicated market, and there's only a few specialists in there, and you know, it hurts their heads to do too much. I had to give up writing for one particular news service because, you know, they were very kind and very great people, but they turned around and said, you know, we don't care how interested people are in out of home entertainment, we just can't, you know, fit it into all of the stuff that we're doing, visiting Oculus and visiting HTC at the moment.
Yeah, you know, and I'm kind of torn between it because, you know, when I see something reported on from, you know, and this is me just being a very narrow-minded American, when I see stuff reported on from another country, I know I'm not going there and I know I don't live there, so I don't really care as much. If it was here in the States, hey, tell me all about it. You know, tell me all about the Void. Tell me all about the Void in 8 different places and all the exciting stuff that's going on there. But do I really care what's happening in other countries? And that's just my initial narrow-minded thought process. But in reality, I really do care. Really do care because it's neat to know that that's happening, because then it might come to the States or it might be a in-home entertainment option someday down the road.
Well, as a specialist in this sector, I've been doing this quite a few years, and I've got a rough idea of how the gravy train works. You know, I've had to over the last few years add China to the mix, but I can chart a product or a brand or a trends movement through certain territories and know that it's going to be turning up in the US or in Canada in some format within a certain period. That's why I am waiting eagerly. You know, we have quite a few, you know, 3,000 to 4,000 VR arcades open in China as a conservative guess. I am waiting for the European media and the American media to pick up on the churn, the closures that we've recently seen in some of those facilities. And I know that a lot of people who are going to be using this as their aha moment to go, oh, look, Kevin was wrong all along. Look, all of these VR arcades are closing in China. You know, I can see this, but this is my job as a, you know, there's a fellow consultant in this sector who we do a lot of work with, and he coined the term thought leader regarding a lot of the stuff that we do. I don't like to, you know, call myself a thought leader. I just like to say I'm very nosy.
And there you go.
So I like to keep a very close eye on other markets, and I've always had, through my arcade involvement, close links to Japan, and it's over the last couple of years it's been very kind that the Chinese have now invited us to their hearts. And we've been dealing very close with the Chinese sector out there. But I would really point to the lack of information about what's happening in the out-of-home entertainment sector. If you're in a gold mine, you're not going to really shout about where the location of your gold mine is.
Yeah, that's true. That's very true.
So there's a part of that. There's also a part of, there's a lot of very embarrassed people. I have to sit in boardroom meetings with companies that had originally stated that they were going to be the leaders in the consumer VR sector who have now had to totally pivot their operation. And there's also a little bit of embarrassment in having to admit that. So also there's a little bit of people calming down their hyperbole, as we've seen with our friends at Oculus. That, you know, everybody's now calming down a little bit from the choo-choo hype train that we saw hit the buffers so painfully last year.
You know, I'm really curious, what does, when you consider the immersive tech industry as a whole, and then you look at the out-of-home entertainment section of that, you know, what becomes the thing that kills the out-of-home entertainment? Like, you know, you mentioned there's been some that have closed. What closes them? Is it lack of interest? Is it oversaturation? You know, what is happening in those markets that's causing some of them to fail?
We use a term in the consultancy, the pyramid of pain. At the top of the pyramid of pain is ROI failure, return on investment. They've either spent too much, or they haven't really worked out their business plan to be economic. Next is loss of clients, i.e. they've created a facility which is only good to try once and people never visit again. Then there's content and machine death. They don't upgrade their hardware or their software to keep fresh. And then finally, it's saturation of market. Either someone competes directly with them and gets all of those items above correct, or someone comes in with a much cheaper price.
So it sounds like it's basically the way every other industry works. You pay attention and update, and you win, and you survive, and you drive out the inferior competition. So I guess that's healthy then.
Well, some wag back in 2013 said to me, oh, the arcade industry, it doesn't exist, and even if it does exist, it's a niche. Well,
that wasn't me, was it? Did I say that?
Oh, fuck. No. You're definitely not that arrogant, my dear sir. The issue with that is making sweeping statements in this sector, and I make sweeping statements from time to time. Depends how much gin I've got in me, but the issue is that this is a business, and a business can be driven by interest, by popularity, but it also can be killed by boredom, saturation, and arrogance. And managing expectations as a consultancy is my raison d'etre. It's the main job I have to do. A client wants to either enter a market, has an idea, or wants to invest their money. And we have to sit down with them and give them an idea of how best they can achieve that without believing the hype train. And a lot of the companies I'm speaking to now in this latest phase of VR believe the hype train so much that they are so angry now that you have to work overtime to calm them down towards letting them enter a new market to them, which is our sector.
So how do you think the U.S. market is going to evolve in terms of the out-of-home entertainment aspect of the immersive tech world?
Well, we've seen it split into four sectors. We've had the theme park attractions that have tried to rub a little bit of special sauce onto their roller coasters by the addition of a VR component, the VR coaster.
Yeah.
And we've got about 40 of those operational in North America at the moment. We've had the companies that have created the VR arcades that I was mentioning, which are just really glorified enclosures where you can try out consumer VR content tailored for a pay-for-play model. Mm-hmm. Then we have the warehouse scale, or as I like to call it, the arena scale VR experiences, the Void, zero latency VR studios, where you put on a backpack, head-mounted display, pushed into an arena with other players, and you blast the hell out of zombies. And then we now have the next generation, which is the immersive dark rides, where, again, you're wearing the backpack, but you're involved in a more a more compelling or longer narrative. So it's kind of the Void 2.0. And that's where I'm seeing a lot of activity from the cinema industry as well as from the film industry. So we've seen the money that Sony Pictures put into the Ghostbusters experience, which was followed by the money that Walt Disney put into the Void for the Star Wars experience. But at the same time, we've got companies talking about utilizing the Aliens franchise, the Star Trek franchise, Moon Space Project franchise, courtesy of NASA. We've got all of the major films that are coming out from certain main studios are being turned into VR experiences. The Justice League for the IMAX experience. So again, I think IP and top-level immersive entertainment is where things are going as we move further and further away from what the consumer can do to what we can do. And that is a phrase that we have in KWP called unachievable at home. We are going to see that level move. And seeing something like the Vive Pro is an example of that, kind of the beginning of the chasm opening up between what consumer VR can do and what out-of-home entertainment can do.
So I've had a few experiences that I think you might have some opinions on, and I'd be really curious to hear your thoughts on this.
On everything.
I know. Well, that's why we have you on the show, because that's what people like to enjoy listening to. I was at the mall actually just yesterday, and I had seen this at a previous mall here in Seattle, Washington, but now I've seen it again. These are it's a kiosk in the center of the mall, so it's not an actual physical location. It's out in the, you know, main area of the mall. It is these two white they look like pod seats from the 60s, you know, like an egg that you can sit into. And then you have a VR headset, and they charge you $8 to put on a VR headset and get some form of experience. And I'm assuming that the seat rotates or moves or has, you know, 3 degrees of, I don't know exactly, because I've never seen anybody using them. They're available, but I've never seen anybody using them. Now the interesting part for me is I'm walking along the mall, and being a VR geek, things pop out at me. I see things and I go, I recognize that. I need to go look at that. Here was that very obvious, very recognizable picture of the guy, the Oculus guy, looking up with the headset on, with the mouth open, needs to shave, you know, it just all in wonderment. And it, that's plastered on the side of this kiosk. And I go, oh, well, they must have Oculus headsets there. So I walk over, talk to the guy. I said, hey, just curious, what kind of technology are you using? He says, well, we use the Oculus backend system, but the headsets are actually made by PMax. And I went, PMax? Who's PMax? And I look, and sure enough, he meant PiMax.
Yes, he did.
And he said, yes, these are the PMax 4K headsets, but we use the Oculus backend. And I went, okay. Yeah, what are your thoughts on these things?
Well, let's see. I always like to say that there's been about four phases of the Chinese revolution in VR since 2013, 2014. And those are the earliest phase. They're called 9Ds or 9D eggs. They are built by about four or five different Chinese companies. And it's let's be kind. A unusually interesting 4D motion base with a head-mounted display on top. They've used PiMax's, Deepoon's, 3i. These are the Chinese head mounts that are about DK2 quality. And they're cheap and cheerful. And some of them aren't even tracked. So you're sitting in this motion egg seat with a head mounted on, and it's not even moving. But, you know, fundamentally, these are pop-up VR short lease experiences. These are a company that's done a deal on Alibaba, got these shipped in, you know, using totally dodgy software replacement. And they're just, you know, paying a short amount. And the next time you go back to the shopping mall, the massage seats will have replaced the 9D eggs. that is the periphery of all sectors that are growing. We have a lot of companies in our sector. You know, if you come to our big theme park trade show in Orlando in November, you'll see a lot of companies that are giving what some people would have called bad VR compared to jumping on board one of the arena scale systems where you have a real fundamental life-changing experience.
Yeah, I was really disappointed. You know, I'm looking around and I don't see any sensors at all with nope. these egg seats. There was no, you know, lighthouse boxes. There was no Oculus sensors. There was no anything. And I was really almost kind of curious just to spend the $8 to have the experience so I can share it with people. But I'm pretty convinced that these are a bad idea.
These are the cardboard to your Rift.
Oh, okay. Well, see, that explains it right there. That's perfect. I mean, even if it's somebody who's never done VR before, okay, I'm struggling here because I actually mentioned that a kiosk in a mall, and this is years ago in the very beginning, that a kiosk at the mall might be the right way to introduce people to VR for the first time. But I did not mean a 3 degree of freedom egg seat that you pay $8 for a mediocre experience. I did not intend for that to be. This is the wrong evolution of my idea.
Reverend Kyle, it is the churchman in you that has made you want to be a evangelist. But I'm not an evangelist. I'm a businessman. And I'm not here to put people into VR to give them a VR experience. I'm here to give them an experience, period.
Interesting. It's an interesting perspective.
Is it a virtual reality helmet, headset, HMD, 3D projection mapped environment, Pico projection over shield? I don't care. As long as it can achieve an immersive experience, then that's the technology that we're putting into our entertainment experience.
So the other experience that I wanted to bring up with you is something that's been around for quite a long time, and I'm sure you're very well versed in it. In Disneyland or Disney World, whichever one you want to go to, the Honey, I Shrunk the Audience experience was my first foray into what is considered a 4D cinema experience. What are your thoughts on that? I mean, that's been around since the 90s.
Oh, well, even before the 90s. So I come from a background in military simulation, and I'm also an ex-Walt Disney Imagineer. And, you know, we really did hunt down the best immersive technology that we could get our hands on. And there's a ride that many of your listeners will be familiar with called Star Tours.
Yeah.
That is a enclosed, it's a 747 motion flight simulator motion base with a giant box stuck on top that can carry 60 seats and has a big screen at the end of it. And people get shaken around while watching a film developed by George Lucas based on the Star Wars franchise. And everybody loves it. It's one of, you know, first installed in 1989 and the rest is history.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of that a lot of the technology, such as Honey, I Shrunk the Kids and all of that, all derives from the big screen watching experience, be shaken around, corresponding to what you see on screen, have a nice time. I just had one of my best virtual or immersive experiences ever recently while I was out in Orlando at the big convention I mentioned earlier, where we got to ride the Pandora flight simulator that has been developed for the Pandora Land.
Avatar, right. Yeah.
And this is a 10K projector, full motion base, individual 3D, olfactory, smell, wind. This thing, after you've ridden it, after you've done it, you go, wow. And the thing was, we were riding it with a number of the people from the trade industry, and a number of the people riding it were people from the virtual reality trade industry out of home. And a lot of them had that kind of quizzical look on their face saying, oh, my God. You know, we can't even touch that with our current technology.
Right, right. See, I think that's what drives the, you know, and just generically speaking, just the arcade experience as most people know it, is that they expect to be able to experience a more robust overall sense than they can get at home. You know, anybody can play a console. Anybody can, you know, have a Game Boy and sit in a car and have an experience. Or anybody can put a Rift or a Vive on and have an experience. But I think when people go to these out-of-home entertainment venues, they expect more.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I think that's just common to expect it to be better. But
we have to deliver, or else they'll go somewhere else, or they'll stay at home. But right. Vice versa, the consumer sector's walked into this problem. Too much hyperbole meant that people thought that what they would be achieving on their Rift and one on their Vive, or even on their Samsung Gear VR, was going to be of such a compelling experience that, you know, they would never have to leave the house again. And the disappointment from we look at the returns, even though our friends at Sony have achieved phenomenal sales of the PSVR, they are also very canny not to report all of the returns and all of the issues that they've had to deal with. It's part of the reason why they're investing so much in a better tracking technology for their next gen. And same goes with the PC Master Race, that their aspirations of what they would be able to be doing at this point in time with their VR technology hasn't quite got there yet.
No, it's one of those things where, you know, people struggle. Well, okay, small anecdotal story here. I was at a VR meetup here in Seattle just recently, and I was talking to two guys who were young-ish, younger than me, which I find that to be quite often. and I said, oh, okay, so, you know, how long have you been with, you know, how long have you been in the VR immersive tech industry? And he goes, oh, yeah, I've been in it for a long time. I think I started in, like, November of 2016. And the other guy goes, oh, I've got you beat. I've been there since the end of December 2015. And I'm like, guys, I think that because for me, it's been over 5 years. And for you, it's been, what, 20 plus?
Yeah, I put my first head in a head-mounted display in 1992.
Yeah, and the first time I put my head in a VR headset was 96.
Okay.
And that was I was at Epcot Center in Disney World in Florida.
All right.
Yeah.
We've got at our conference Jesse Schell, who was the founder of the VR studio at Disney, speaking. So we hope to have some anecdotes about the Disney Vision HMD.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, this was actually a virtuality headset. Ooh, yeah, I played Dactyl Nightmare. Yeah,
virtuality. Yeah. A British company. Lovely. Yeah, we had a chance to speak to Dr. Jonathan Walden, the guy who founded that company.
Right.
So, you know, when I talk to people about the phases of the VR industry since the 60s, since Ivor Sutherland really laid out the opportunity of this, and also we've got to remember Sensorama as well as another major component. We've seen a number of occasions. So we've seen the Evans and Sutherland Sensorama, Sword of Damocles period. Then we've seen the Jar and Lanier period.
Right,
with
right.
VPL, 1989, and all of that. Then we've seen what I would call the Jonathan Walden, the virtuality period, which was quite big for me coming from the arcade sector. And then we've kind of had the Sony HMZ Palmer Lucky period.
Right.
And I'm expecting for this to kind of calm down again in the next couple of months when there's some major announcements and some shakeups. And then we will look forward to hopefully 2019, 2020, when Mark Zuckerberg gets on the stage at Oculus Connect 8 and tells us they've invented a hands-free, totally portable plug into the back of your brain HMD.
Yeah, I'm not plugging anything made by Facebook into my brain. I'll tell you that right now.
No comment.
Yeah. I'd be curious to hear what my audience has to say. Would you be willing to wet wire something made by Facebook into your brain? Please let me know. Find me on Twitter or Facebook or whatever and let me know. I'd be really curious to hear what people's opinions on that are.
When someone said to me that the VR porn industry was going to be big, I don't think everybody understood about the caginess of wetware and teledildonics if there is a Amazon or Google or a Facebook logo written down the product that you're using.
Yeah, yeah. We'll see how that evolves. I've been a strong advocate for, you know, as Disney and porn goes, thus the industry will go. And yeah. I think that's still true. I think that's still very true.
But I think you'll find that experiential is going to be something you'll be hearing a lot more about regarding immersive entertainment and not just head-mounted displays. A lot of the stuff that we're looking at now in the latest generation is using technology from the military, which is using Pico projectors that fill your field of view, or are using 3D projection mapping. Experiential, where it's, you don't have to wear a head-mounted display to experience a digitally immersive environment, is the future. And a lot of what you'll be hearing Disney doing with their Star Wars hotel builds upon that mixed reality. It's real with augmentation from digital technology.
So let's switch gears just a little bit and talk about the state of the current VR headsets that are out there. We've got the Oculus Rift, we've got the HTC Vive, which now has the Vive Pro. We have both
aimed at the prosumer market and also aimed at our sector.
Exactly right. And I have tried the Vive Pro, and it's pretty cool. It's definitely a bump up. I'm still waiting to hear what the price will be, but I have a feeling that it'll be worth it.
You have to be careful that this product is not aimed at, I own a Vive, I want to upgrade. A lot of what they're developing there is what they're hoping to fill the void of commercial entertainment as well as prosumers, people who need it for architectural. Because also you need to have a bump in the computer power to run the Vive Pro best.
So let me ask your opinion on this, because I've had this conversation with a few people, and I guess now is as good a time as any to bring it up. When I hear what you just said, which you're not the only person saying that, oh, well, it's not targeted at the general consumer audience of the Vive. Right. It's a prosumer. What do you think the percentage of general consumers that own, you know, out of all the people that own Vives, how many of them are not prosumers?
Let me give you a little example. There is a theme park company that installed a virtual reality attraction here in England. The company's called Merlin, and they developed something called the Darren Brown Ghost Train, and it's a virtual reality experience married to a horror experience married to a dark ride. Just for that attraction, that company brought nearly 500 Vives.
Okay.
That is not the only out-of-home entertainment attraction or virtual reality arcade facility using Vives. I think you would be very surprised to know how much of Vives headsets didn't go into Johnny and Jerry's home.
You know, I'm not really sure if I'd be surprised, but I think there's a lot of people who would be, because when you read things like the Vive subreddit or the Oculus subreddit, you tend to see a lot of really enthusiastic people bragging about how awesome their headset is. And then there's a whole bunch of other people making comments that don't own one, but they just want to talk about it. And I'm wondering what the ratio of enthusiasts who haven't bought one versus prosumers who have already had two iterations or three iterations of the Vive versus, you know, I think that...
Can we just touch upon all the other headsets out there? No one likes talking about the OSVR. The OSVR is the headset that's used in the zero latency Outer Home Entertainment System. It is also used in a number of other location-based entertainment systems. They're still with us. Star VR. The majority of Star VR headsets have gone into IMAX VR facilities or into other location-based entertainments. The Pimax 4, the one that you talked about,
yeah,
has had a fantastic career in Chinese outer home entertainment market, as well as the consumer market. And now the Pimax 8K and the 8KX are aimed squarely at prosumers as well as our sector. Then you've got the Deepun, which many people will not know about, but you know, if they go off and look at one of my articles in VR Focus, they'll see examples of the Deepun, which is very popular in outer homes technology. And the list goes on.
I think that there's, you know, you've mentioned several headsets that I have tried once at a convention
and or never
expo and never saw or tried again. Now, the OSVR folks, I've talked to them on my podcast, and I'm very aware of them and what they're doing. I have a Deepun t-shirt somewhere that I just couldn't part with because it's just,
the Deepun E3 is a real good head mount. Real good headphones.
You know what I'd like to see? Because I don't even know if these folks are targeting even the prosumer audience here in the States, but I don't have any of these headsets. Like, I don't have a Deepun. I don't have an OSVR. I don't have a Star VR. I don't have, you know, where are these headsets and why aren't they in influencers' hands in the States? And I think the reason is because they don't care.
They are in influencers' hands. It's okay. Just they're not influencers that have a podcast or influencers that have a news service. They're in influencers' hands who are going to buy a couple of thousand. They're so, in, you know,
well, those aren't influencers then. Around,
there's a test facility in Los Angeles run by a very large startup that's part of a film studio, and they've got all the headsets in there. You know, we used to joke about Palmer Luckey's museum. Well, forget that. These guys have got all the head mounts. And also some of the new stuff, the new laser light stuff that, again, is not aimed at consumer, but is aimed at commercial.
But if, are they expecting to have a consumer base in this industry? Because if they are, then if they're giving it to influencers in industries other than consumer, then if they don't end up in consumers' hands at some point, that's kind of their fault, not, you know, because if they're in influencers' hands, it's not the right ones, in my opinion.
And it's what they want to achieve.
Okay.
It's very important to understand that many people have now changed their opinion of how best to influence the consumer. So you look at HTC, and they have embraced with both hands and both feet the out-of-home side because it's a great way to get people to see their product. And, you know, even ever so reluctantly, we've seen Oculus have to, you know, bite the bullet and pivot and sort of have to now kind of embrace the use of their system for out-of-home entertainment. And then you look at Samsung. Samsung's had great success with the Gear VR being used as a commercial entertainment system on roller coasters and 4D theaters.
Yeah, yeah.
How the arcade industry helped the consumer games industry take off. If you're going to do that, you look at everybody was playing arcade games and then said, I want to be able to play that at home. And I think what's happened is some bad mooju and some bad business and some naivety has meant that someone put the cart before the horse before someone worked out that they need to rectify the problem.
Well, I think if, you know, if Deepun wants to send me a headset, I'd be more than happy to talk about it. That's all I'm saying.
I could introduce you to a very nice man in China that would love to speak to you.
Well, there you go. Well, have, you know, because and that's a great segue because I had the opportunity to try out the HTC Focus, which is their standalone, untethered, 3DOF, or is it 6DOF?
They're 6DOF.
So it has the inside-out tracking, like the Microsoft Mixed Reality headsets. Yeah, I gave it a shot. You know, I was playing a wonderful game by a wonderful company here in Seattle. That's why they had the headset here in the States, because it's not available here in the States. Tried the headset on. Wasn't impressed with the fit of the headset, and it occurred to me
different anthropometrics.
Yeah, exactly. It's built for an Asian face. And I don't have an Asian face.
Don't you? Oh, well.
No, I don't. I know. Even though, despite my my high rosy cheekbones that I inherited from my grandmother, I just don't. It didn't fit. There was a lot of light leakage coming in from the sides. Was not expecting that. Overall, it
They do have a Western anthropometric version.
Okay.
Production version, and again, we're waiting to hear how the various behind the scenes machinations go regarding the HTC and the Samsung systems, and how all of that politics that we're not meant to know about is going to roll out. But definitely, I feel for those people that are importing the Asian anthropometric ones, because they're going to have a lot of cut noses and dented foreheads, but that's what being a early adopter prosumer usually entails.
Yeah, I've been there and done that. I know that. In the 3DOF controller system, you know, anytime you have a 3DOF controller with a 6DOF headset, or a 3DOF with a 3DOF, 3DOF controllers in my mind are almost pointless. I really just don't see a huge value in a 3DOF controller. Just give me a clicker that's not tracked at that point, because you're constantly recentering and recalibrating, and the amount of drift is just enormous, because all they have in it is a couple IMUs. You know, they're not being tracked through, you know, Constellation or Lighthouse or whatever. It's just really unfortunate.
It's going to be interesting to see how the Go, the Oculus Go, is received.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to the Go. Because the specific type of content that I will be consuming does not have
a controller.
Exactly. I'm not going to use a controller. It's going to be very passive. I'm going to be, you know, doing chats or watching videos or using it on an airplane. I'm not going to care about trying to play Sprint Vector on it or something. You know, I mean, it's just.
Oh, well. I look forward. And I think, you know, when I had stuck my head in the production prototype of the Go, and then recently we had a chance to try out the Samsung Odyssey. It's interesting how when you start using these systems, you're not thinking about how good the HMD is. You're thinking about how you're going to be using it, which is, for me, the beginning of the reality of this sector, where we stop worrying about the color TV we're watching the sports game on. We care about the sports game.
See, that I think is a really interesting perspective. And I think it's something that, you know, I'm going to take away from this podcast is, you're right, we stop caring about the hardware and we start caring about the content. That's important, because that means that we've stabilized in terms of an ecosystem. And I think we are getting there. I think within the next year or two, we'll be stable.
I'm concerned that we're going to have to go through a lot of churn. There's the elephant in the room. There's a number of elephants in the room, but the big elephant in the room is that we've reached that point where a lot of the investment money that was given in 2013 and 2014 to companies to jump on the VR bandwagon and make millions upon millions, you know, the piper is calling up for their money, and we are going to have to, by the law of averages, see a lot of churn, a lot of closure, a lot of restructuring, a lot of acquisition in this sector. You know, as we saw with Alt VR and all of that, no matter how good your product is, if you can't pay, you can't play. And also, we've got another situation, which is, the media is not happy in the way that the hype train was steered for VR, and there is also going to be another backlash. And again, E3 is going to be a phenomenally interesting show to watch, to see how prevalent VR is within that show. You know, for all the hype you heard about CES, VR wasn't as prevalent at CES as it was last year or the year before.
Oh, really? Okay, because, I mean, I saw a lot of, I was actually under the impression it was the opposite, that there was way more VR, just because of the way it was reported. I didn't go personally.
That's the point. If your journalist is stuck inside the Vive booth, well, it wasn't even booth, the Vive hotel room, and all you'd heard was talked about was what was happening in that room, you would be led to believe that that was the whole of CES, when really it was more AR than VR this year on the show.
Okay. So if I'm saying that immersive technology or, AR slash VR, then there was a big presence there. But you're right. There was a lot more AR than maybe I saw than VR.
And a lot of companies that feel that they've got systems, you know, I don't want to, you know, I know you're the king of AR much more than I do. I don't follow it as closely as I should, because it, you know, there's only a small number of these products that are going to turn up in out of home entertainment. You know, we've only now just started using HoloLenses on go-karts for augmented reality Mario Kart kind of experience.
Oh God, please tell me you're kidding. Really?
No, it's real. It's brilliant.
Well,
I'll give you a video. I'll send a link. We've also got an augmented reality Puck-Man game using HoloLens. So yeah, I you know, you're talking to a man that nearly lost his cheddar when he saw how bad the field of view was on the HoloLens. I nearly strangled a very close friend when I found out how much the hype machine had derailed that little puppy.
Yeah.
And again, that's why I'm very skeptical. Anybody who knows me, I'm incredibly skeptical about Magic Leap, and I, you know, I'm looking forward to be proven wrong on that system.
Yeah, yeah.
But from AR's point of view, it's still the jury's quite considerably out here, where we are managing, no matter how slowly, to apply the current VR technology into our sector and making some money out of it.
Well, that's pretty cool. Have you tried any of the Microsoft mixed reality headsets at all?
All of them.
What's your opinion on it?
Samsung's the best one with the best screen layout. All of them are slightly lower quality makes, so they feel a little cheaper if you're used to other types of head mounts. And no matter what they say, the inside out tracking just doesn't cut it. But again, this is the opinion of Kevin Williams, who's got lots of opinions, and not the opinion of the company or our media service.
Well, in my opinion varies. I think that, because I've spent a lot of time with the mixed reality headsets, and I think a year ago I would have agreed with you. I've changed my tune a bit. And
Which one's changed your tune?
Well, the HP headset is pretty nice, but definitely that Samsung Odyssey. Wow.
Oh,
what a champ. I mean, we're developing something right now at the agency I work at, 8 Ninths, and we're using that headset, and I'm very, very impressed with the quality, the tracking. You know, obviously, when you have inside-out tracking with six-DOF controllers, you put them behind your back, it's going to lose them. Yes.
Oh, no.
Yeah. But that's to be expected. But overall, I mean, it's really easy to use.
The Odyssey is 10 times better than all of its competition. And how did you get your hands on? I mean, did you have to get some guy to Alibaba them to you?
No. We have friends at Microsoft that made things happen for us. So,
well, we're all hoping that this political spat ends soon, so that, you know, we can see the Odyssey. Because I really think that could throw the cat amongst the pigeons if the Odyssey does make it over to the West in quantities. We're using, you know, all the clients that I have that are looking at using WinMR applications in outer home entertainment. We already have the first theme park attractions using WinMR headsets, Aces at the moment. You know, we're trying desperately to get these guys to move across to the Odyssey, converted for Western anthropometrics. Because that also has a little bit of Asian nose problem.
Right, yeah.
But the interesting fact is, I think, you know, I'm not going to go into the politics of why the Odyssey is not allowed in the West. I'm just going to say that will really put the cat amongst the pigeons if it does manage to come over.
Yeah, it's a great headset, and I'm looking forward to seeing how the Microsoft MR headsets integrate into the consumer base, because, you know, not having sensors, not having lighthouse, not having a camera, you know,
plug and play.
Exactly. You plug it into a laptop and you go. I mean, that's just a wonderful setup. And I think that that's, I think that's what a lot of people want. High resolution, decent lenses, comfortability, and ease of use.
It's open almost, software environment, yeah. So you don't have to use Revive and all of this stuff.
Right.
And you know, and we get rid of the PC Master Race Brigade, and hopefully we head towards the aspirations we had with the DK1 and DK2.
Well, I don't want to disparage the PC Master Race folks, because you know they are near and dear to my heart. I occasionally bend in that direction. However, there is a time and a place for them to step aside and let the consumers take a foothold, and you know, they're the bleeding edge folks, and they're the pioneers.
Thank you for pioneering this fantastic opportunity.
Exactly. You guys are the ones that test this stuff and let the rest of the world know whether it's good or bad. So
even if you don't want to know.
That's right. Yeah. So kudos to the PC Master Race. I feel like we have talked a lot about VR. We haven't talked a lot about AR. We mentioned it a couple times. I don't want to really get into the whole AR thing, because I think that's a whole nother podcast for a whole nother time. And, you know, it's to me, AR is kind of a year or two behind VR, but eventually we'll catch up. And I think that there is some amalgamation that'll happen in the future.
I'd love to send you some of the, I'm going to send you the videos that you can include in this podcast for people to look up regarding the Mario Kart kind of experiences in the Putman. But there is some other stuff out there that we're looking at in the mixed reality, in the proper usage of the phrase mixed reality.
That's right, Microsoft.
Which will curl your toes and you will get straight away, because it speaks your language a lot more than the VR language.
And
it's interesting. One of the sad things, you know, so if we jumped in the time machine and young bouncy Kevin from our podcast back in 2014 spoke to grumpy old Kevin in 2018, I would be very unhappy to have to break the news to my younger self that the cast AR did not survive.
Oh, I was just talking about that just recently. Wonderful folks, clever idea.
Yeah.
Just didn't happen. And I'd love to get my hands on one of those still.
And was kind of killed, because we had a number of clients in the outer home entertainment market that were sort of saying, shut up and take our money.
Right.
But because the investors and a lot of the politics, I was surprised to find out about how much of the politics had survived even after the departure of certain team. Again, it's an aspect of my business. Being a self-operating consultant, I can be arrogant and sort of brush aside the politics. But you still have to remember that a lot of business is not just luck and money, but it is also the right team and the right politics.
Well, I get that. And it's unfortunate that the tech just can't speak for itself and just evolve itself without people ruining it.
Yeah, get rid of the people and
We need AI to create AR. That's what we need.
Well, I'm looking at thinking machines now. You know, we in the theme park industry are using more and more smart autonomous thinking machines in not just the ticketing and the marketing and the advertising, but actually the movement and the play of the experience. So I'm getting very worried that AI is going to replace my job in a couple of months. At least my accountant would be a lot happier to have an AI bot rather than the drunken sot that he has to deal with at the moment.
Oh, that's brilliant. Yeah, who knows? Who knows what will happen? Next time we talk, you know, we might be talking
Kevin
about...
Kevin 2.0.
There you go. So tell us, as we wrap this up here, tell us, you know, what can we expect from Kevin Williams in the next couple months? You know, what's the evolution of you and what's in your future?
Well, we've got in a couple of weeks' time the Amusement Expo taking place in Las Vegas. That's the big American video amusement and redemption industry show. I'll be presenting there and a number of panels regarding VR arcade and beyond. We've also got CinemaCon coming up which is the cinema industry's gathering, which we'll also have some involvement with. The big thing for KWP will be the Future of Immersive Leisure conference that we hold in May 16th and 17th. That is a trade session dedicated to all elements of immersive entertainment, not just VR, but also some of the other stuff that we've been talking about. And we've got to start the manuscript for the next book, the follow-on to The Immersive Frontier, which will hopefully be coming out at the middle of the year. And then Kevin will be put in a box and lowered into the ground, I think, at that point.
Well, let's hope not too soon.
Yeah, it's great to be busy. I have, you know, we have never been so busy at KWP. We've never been so busy with the Stinger Report. We've never had so many people interested in our sector. As my father always said, nothing sucks more than success.
Wow. That sounds like something that my grandfather would have said. That's great. Okay, so if people want more information from you or would like to subscribe to this marvelous Stinger Report, which I am a subscriber of, you know, how do people get a hold of you?
Oh, well, it's kwp@thestingerreport.com. There'll be a link to that. I do an article, a series of articles in VR Focus called The Virtual Arena, which is easy to hunt down. And if you go to the www.dna-association.com, you can see coverage of our sector, and also there's links to get me there. We're around everywhere. And there's something new that we've added to the mix now. We've got a YouTube channel, and we've just started doing Stinger Report Live, where I actually video when I'm at shows and at facilities. And we videoed a couple of the... we were at the Star Wars opening for the Star Wars Experience. We've been to the VR Star Arcade here and the IMAX VR Arcade. So hopefully we're giving a new dimension to the Stinger Report other than having to plow through very boring English bad grammar.
Well, that's good to know. Yeah, I mean, the newest generation, millennials, my children, they consume all of their media from 10-minute videos on YouTube. So, yeah, like all of their content. If it doesn't come from two goobers talking to each other and screaming at each other across a Minecraft board, I don't think half of my children know about it. It's amazing the way the younger generation. I'm starting to sound like an old man here, Kevin. This is not good.
No. you're only as young as the woman you feel. So the... The issue here is that I believe we don't call millennials, we call them millennium-minded. These are individuals that think that this technology and all the applications can give them what they want. They're going to suddenly work out that they're only getting a tenth of the stuff. And, you know, I'm dealing with individuals now who are asking questions about history, and it's lovely to have to point them to a unique tool called a book.
Yeah, they have no idea what that is. They have no idea.
So, but the battery life's much better.
Yeah, it is, typically. Yeah, and the screen resolution, out of sight.
Oh,
yes.
It's amazing.
Well, Kevin, you know, as always, wonderful conversation. And, you know, I always look forward to hearing your opinion on things because I feel like it might not be as represented. Your opinions coming from your perspective might not always be... you know, represented, and that's good to be able to share that with my audience, and I really appreciate that.
No, the pleasure's all mine, and please, more power to your elbow, and we must repeat this regarding AI and mixed reality.
Absolutely. We'll get that on the books and get that to our audience down the road here sometime. All right, well, Kevin, thank you very much. Enjoy your trip through the metaverse or cyberspace, whatever you want to call it, and we'll talk again soon.
Speak soon.
All right. Thank you. And thank you all very much for listening.
This podcast is a production of RevVR Studios. Music provided by Jesse Spillane. Comments and views expressed on the RevVR podcast are the sole opinions of Reverend Kyle or his guests. For more information, visit RevVRStudios.com.